Hey everybody, this is Robert Bohorquez. Just wanted to chime in here before the full episode about some discussion that requires a content warning for the movie Tampopo. So yeah, we get into a little bit of graphic discussion surrounding the softshell turtle that appears in the movie. So yeah, if you really love animals, don't want to hear about it, you can either skip that part or maybe this episode isn't for you. But it's not a super long chunk of the episode. It's near the end of our discussion. So just a heads up about that. Other than that, yeah, everybody, enjoy the show. On this week's episode, we crinkle our wrappers with Tampopo. Would you dare to sloop your noodle? Should a bath guarantee a second date? And will you ever look at egg yolks the same way again? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. Everybody, and welcome to 24 Flames Per Second, the podcast that roasts the films we love the most. As always, I'm your host, Robert Spiewak Bohorquez, and welcome to the show. It's February, the month of love and food, and my birthday also. So, yeah, everybody, this is, I'm joining the roasting panel this week as we talk about a movie that I have feelings about. That you'll find out soon enough. Everybody, we're doing Tampopo, which is this ramen western from the 80s that we'll hear more about as we get into it. But yeah, we're all excited to talk about it here, February. It feels like, I don't know, the last episode that wasn't a flame off that we recorded was before the holidays. So it feels good to be back in the semi-truck saddle, so to speak. And so, yeah, everybody, all that being said, hope you're doing well. Let's jump into the broth here, and we'll start with co-host across the city for me this week, the thumbed brie to my egg yolk, Chris Pepper Hambrick.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good. I was trying to find, I don't know. I was having a really hard time choosing like what the little you to me would be this one.
There's some pretty amazing imagery in this film. Yeah. So you can't really go wrong, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, things are good. Yeah. Did you watch the movie this week?
I sure did. I watched it for the first time.
Ooh.
So, I definitely kind of heard about it, but not in a way that like was like, oh, I instantly need to go watch this. And so I'm grateful for this show that makes me dive into parts of my list that were languishing.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. What do you know about it that you can share with the class?
Yeah, so it's a Japanese film from 1985, directed by Juzo Itami. One interesting thing that I learned about him was that he made his directorial debut, I think it was the movie before this, at age 50, which,
whoa,
you know, as someone who has yet to be discovered in my creative endeavors, makes me really happy. It has a 100% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
So you'd think this movie about food, Rotten Tomatoes would know.
That's true.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. And then in terms of like what, you know, Western audiences might be aware of, there's a smaller character, Gun, who mm-hmm. is played by Ken Watanabe, who American audiences would know from what, like The Last Samurai and Batman Begins and a whole bunch of other stuff. So he's had some crossover success. I didn't recognize any of the other actors in this film, but mm-hmm. If listeners might be aware of him. In particular.
Yeah. And Ian, he's also, he's in at least one of the new Godzillas, right?
He's in two. Yeah. He's, he's in, yeah, Godzilla 2014 and King of the Monsters.
He's the Let Them Fight, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. And the other fun fact about this director is that, I haven't seen any of his other films, but I kind of want to now because he has this quirky, attitude towards things. He was put in hospital by some people who were mad about his portrayal of the Yakuza. Oh. And then in a film, which was, you know, less than flattering, I suppose. And then he made an unflattering movie after that. After he got out of hospital, he made an unflattering movie about the healthcare system.
Nice.
So I kind of like this, like the way this guy rolls.
Yeah, I can't even make a movie about the Yakuza anymore without.
I know, right?
Getting put in the hospital.
Who knew?
Next, you should watch A Taxing Woman. That's also pretty fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, and the actress, I just was looking at her Wikipedia page, but who plays Tampopo was Jusa Tommy's wife.
Yep.
And so she's also in that. She's in a bunch of his movies. Yeah. Anyways, that's all great stuff.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Well, let's get to, I mean, you've heard most of everyone who's here already anyways, but let's do some formal introductions of the panel we've got together here. Starting with the other roaster tonight, storyteller and Sula's mom. You can find her on Twitter at Casey Rom. Casey Rom.
Hello.
I just realized that all kind of rhymes now with the Sula's mom in there.
Yeah. I discovered this when the song Stacy's Mom was really popular because it rhymes with my full name.
Sweet.
And so
that's amazing.
A really fun period in high school when I could convince everyone to sing Casey Rom Has Got It Going On to me.
That's great. That's nice. Anyways, how are you doing? Doing well?
Yeah, I'm excited, although I am going to be really happy when I can eat dinner at the end of this recording.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to be sitting here talking about ramen the whole time.
Yeah, I'm very hungry now.
Well, very good. It's great to have you here. And defending Tampopo tonight, he's a Godzilla expert, teacher of the children, and you can find him on Instagram at Possess Ian. Ian Coleman.
Hey, hey.
How we doing? How you doing?
Good. Yeah, it's been a Monday, but I'm here and I'm ready to talk about a great movie about great food.
Okay. Well, we'll see. But yeah, and you know how this goes. First things first, we got movie in a minute. Give us the full plot synopsis of Tampopo. Spoilers and all. We'll give you 60 seconds and a 3 count. Ian, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. The movie starts with two truckers named Goro and Gun. They're driving down a rainy Tokyo road. They decide to stop for some ramen and kind of find that the place isn't up to standard. So after getting beaten up in a fight, Goro kind of takes a shine to the person who runs the ramen shop. She's a middle-aged woman named Tampopo. And he decides to kind of take her under his wing and help her turn the ramen shop into a big success. He tries to teach her many techniques to cooking the perfect bowl of ramen and brings in a gang of, you know, passionate ramen lovers, among whom are a homeless guy who is a, you know, hobbyist ramen master, a drunkard who he got in a fight with, who kind of redeems himself after another fight. And together they manage to turn the place around and help her craft the perfect bowl.
And you're out of time, but you were pretty much there, so I don't know what to do about it. They do.
Do you ever do anything about it? I mean,
you get the horns or you get the like sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'll decide in the edit. but yeah, so I mean, yeah, they renovate her restaurant and, you know, develop this menu for her, and she becomes, dare I say it, a ramen master herself. So, and then they drive off into the Tokyo sunset, which is on a freeway. So that's Tampopo. Excuse me. And so, yeah, everybody, we are going to take a little ad/ Patreon break. When we come back, Ian, we'll get your opening statements why you are here defending a Tampopo. Everybody, we will be right back. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the mid-show break. It's me, your host and movie friend, Robert Bohorgas. And so, yeah, we're here in February. And I should probably pull my calendar up so I know that freak I'm talking about here. But yeah, thanks so much for listening to the show. And for those of you that are part of the Patreon, we got some updates for you here. Last couple of weeks, we put some stuff up. Just this last weekend, or I guess 2 weekends ago when this comes out, we got a drink along for the Stephen King joint Maximum Overdrive, which is it's kind of a corny movie, but it's pretty fun. It's got an all AC/DC soundtrack, nothing to complain about. And then let's see, there's a couple new hot takes that are up, some movie reviews for me. For just a couple in January, it was a very lightly attended month for me at the theater, because a lot of trash came out. But there's some good stuff. And then coming up this month, over the next few weeks, let's see, what do we got? What am I going to actually go probably see? February. Oh, jeez. Maybe not much. But first weekend of March, The Batman is coming out, which is, I'm excited for that. And I think also in March, that horror movie X, another movie with Jenna Ortega, is coming out, which looks pretty cool, pretty crazy. And so, yeah, we'll see. There's some movies coming out to streaming this month that I'll probably watch for sure. The new Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which might be a complete mess based on early reviews. We'll see. And then blah, 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 blah. I don't know. That's all I'm seeing for now. But that's okay. So yeah, hot takes are coming as well. Of course, the extended plays are up there. So go and take a listen and support if you like. And if not, that's just fine. We appreciate everybody that's part of that group. So yeah, everybody, we'll get right back to Tampopo, which is kind of a little birthday celebration for me. I'm very excited. Hope everybody watches the movie if you haven't seen it yet. And we'll catch you in a couple weeks for the next Flame Off with Kwesi, which I don't know what it is yet. He told me something that I already forgot, but that's okay. Something that was cooking. And then for the rest of us, I close my calendar like a dingus. What's coming out in March? Boop, boop. 16th, 17th, 14th, 9th. The 16th of March. Oh, we're doing Rent. I don't know why, but we are. So that's fine. Musicals are good. So yeah, everybody, we'll catch you in a couple weeks for Flame Off. Well, until then, here's the rest of Tampopo, everybody. Back to the show. And we're back, everybody. Welcome back to the Tampopo episode here. Just before the break, Ian, what can I say? Boiled his noodles too long? I don't know. Just a little too long. It made just the difference. I don't know. I feel like I'm Tampopo telling that one ramen shop that all their shit is bad, but he did a pretty good job. And so, Ian, let's get your opening statements. Why are you here defending Tampopo?
First, I gotta help you with your pun. I'm gonna say that my broth got a little too cloudy.
There you go.
Yeah.
There
you go. Okay. Yeah. So I'm here defending Tampopo because it's just a really joyous and wholesome and fun movie that never really fails to make me hungry every time I watch it. And it also never fails to make me smile. It's got charming characters. It's got delicious shots of ramen. It's got fun little vignettes that are kind of just entertaining asides to the film, but are at the same time really just funny and joyous. It's just a really sweet and wholesome and delicious movie.
Okay. Let's see. I've got on my list, Casey, that we could start with either the characters, because he just mentioned the fun characters. I mean, we both had thoughts on the plot. Do you have a choice which you'd rather?
I think we should start with plot, because
okay.
I heard some interesting words in Ian's opening statement, one of which was wholesome. I don't find this movie wholesome. I think it's either irritating, like I don't appreciate the central plot line in which a bunch of men tell a woman that her cooking is bad, and then I really don't think the vignettes work for me. I actually just talked about this in the extended play for the best sex movie Flame Off, but I don't think that food and sex should be mixed together. It's gross. So that whole plot line didn't work. And yeah, not wholesome.
Yeah. And just to piggyback a little bit on the vignettes thing is just that there's a stretch in the, I want to say it's just smack in the middle of the movie that is just, you know, bouncing from not tempopo plot to non-tempopo plot, mm-hmm. where it's like kind of this baton handing off between all these characters, but you're just kind of like, okay, wondering what's going on with the ramen shop? Like, what am I watching here? It's just like, I don't know. I don't know what that, it's hard for me to understand what the point of these just little kind of like Looney Tunes happening on the side.
At one point I legitimately was like, oh, are we just done with Tampopo? Like, is that we're done with that section now? Like, I thought maybe it was an anthology because yeah, the pacing of how the vignettes are used is really bizarre in the middle.
I think that the argument that it's about a bunch of guys teaching a woman how to cook because her cooking is bad is a little bit reductive. I think that this movie is more about like, and she's an artist trying to master a craft. And really what this movie is to me is it's a celebration of passion and it's a celebration of the spirit of artistry and how it can kind of be, you know, carried into people's lives sort of, you know, no matter what situation you're in. I just really like I think what I really connect to in this movie is just that we get all these different experts from like all these different walks of life, even like these people who are in pretty objectively bad situations, personal situations, but we really get to see them carry their love of cooking and kind of carry it into these situations that aren't working out too fortunately for them. And it really just shows that like, the joy of being passionate about something and passing that passion down onto somebody who can then, you know, share it with other people through mastery of the craft. I just find that aspect of the plot really inspiring. So yes, she, you know, happens to be a woman. I think that's kind of incidental to the plot. Aside from, you know, wanting to have that love story element in there too, but yeah, it's kind of taking that classic trope of cowboy comes in and, you know, helps out this town/girl in trouble and kind of just like merges that whole trope into one character. But yeah, puts a really wholesome spin on it.
That actually, I'm glad you mentioned the love story because I did forget about it. And I want to know why it's in the movie because it doesn't have... Why is it in the movie?
It's not very well developed. It kind of feels shoehorned in to me at the end. I'm just like, oh, was that happening?
I mean, I don't think it's a secret that this movie is a riff on Western tropes. And one Western trope is, you know, we get a town girl who falls in love with the cowboy hero. And they have a connection, but ultimately he has to go right off into the sunset and have his next adventure because he's not really made for settling down. In fact, we even do get one scene that addresses that. I think that moment where they have dinner together, where they go out to eat, is a really kind of pivotal moment in developing that relationship. We do get the sense that Goro really does reciprocate her feelings, but at the same time, he tells that really kind of heartbreaking story of he wanted to create a warm and wholesome home for his family, and he just really wasn't able to play that part. So I think he, even though he reciprocated the connection that they felt, he knows that he's not really built for that, and he had to just kind of go right off into the sunset.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I'm curious, though, because to me, that main plot is just not that strong, and it's clearly not strong enough to carry the entire runtime of a movie. And so I'm curious how you justify the vignettes, because to me it just felt like, oh, we got to make this long enough to be a movie. Like, there just wasn't enough story there.
I mean, the vignettes are all variations on the same thing as the movie, and that's, again, people being passionate about food to a pretty absurd degree. And I think we see that variation on a theme in both the main plot and the vignettes. But I just really love all the different takes that, and all the different spins that the vignettes put on that theme, some of which range from like really funny to actually pretty heartbreaking. Like the one where the mom is cooking that dish of rice and then she dies and the family's weeping as they cherish the last meal she ever cooked for the family. It just really like gets me choked up. And also just the whole situation of the old lady just wanting the perfect version of whatever she's trying to buy at the grocery store, to the degree that she'll like massage the peach to, you know, it explodes, and she's massaging the cheese so that like she's leaving her fingerprints in there. Like, it's a, I don't know, like they're all just these things I can relate to as a person who, you know, does that himself, not to quite that same degree in grocery stores, but just as somebody who loves food and as somebody who just likes seeing people who are joyously passionate about something.
Is she, that old lady is putting her thumbs in everything, is she actually buying food, or is she just fucking food up for other people?
Well, she wanted to get the best version of whatever she was trying to buy.
Okay, I'm just going to step in here.
In a bag,
because that is not what I got from that scene.
Really?
Yeah.
First time viewer says no.
I don't think she was shopping. I think her thing is going into grocery stores and filling up the food.
My impression was like, you know, she wanted the plumpest, the plumpest peach. So she was like massaging it to test it out. And of course she was being super hard about it because she's super picky, and she wanted like the softest cheese. So she was feeling that up. That was what I took from it. I mean, I'm the kind of guy.
No, I think it's a dirtier version of the bean scene from Amelie. Like, she just likes the sensation of putting her hand in the tub of beans or whatever. And this lady, like the way they do the close up on the peach, that is not a platonic close up.
If we learned anything from Call Me By Your Name, it's that peaches are very sexual.
I mean, I'm sorry to step in there, but like, I can't let that peach thing go.
No, I mean, I agree with you. And I think it's interesting because, Ian, you may be right, and that might be what the director was going for. But to me, that's just another example of how it wasn't successful, because I didn't get that at all. Like, I did not get that interpretation. I'm with Pepper on this.
I mean, the movie does make a pretty explicit connection between like sex and food. And I think that's what it's trying to say, is that like they both kind of stem from like they both kind of stem from the same carnal root. They're about joy and like a physical sensation. And so I think what the argument the movie's trying to make is like they're essentially two sides of the same coin.
It's interesting. I like that, carnal root. I have something else that I'm curious, just what the deal is. So like a lot of these vignettes, like you kind of said that there's like, oh, there's really sad ones. Oh, there's really goofy ones. There's really happy ones. I think one of the things that I'm responding to is just how uneven the vignette structure can work as an anthology film. I think we can acknowledge that, but I think the thing that I just wanted a little bit more out of is just some tonal congruity. Like, it's just like this roller coaster of like up and down and up and down, even in Tampopo's story, where you know, the love story feels weirdly jammed in there, because like the rest of the story, just her story it's just not like the romance feels like it comes out of nowhere, because it's like they so far have like everybody just has a professional relationship with each other, like making this ramen as good as it can be. And so, like, that's what that's a thing with the direction that I have, is just that, like, it feels not, I don't know, it just feels like there's, like, too many ideas. This movie seems unfocused because of it, and, like, not even. It's just, like, hard to latch on because it's just kind of cartoonish is, like, the word I wrote down, where it's, like, you know, the young kid ordering the whatever, asking all the questions in the fancy restaurant, and all the businessmen, like, their faces turn, like, bright red, and, like, the slurping scene right after that. And, you know, sometimes the cartoonish stuff is next to each other, but sometimes it's not, and that's what seems bizarre to me.
I mean, I think that from the very first scene, the movie kind of lets you know what you're in for. It opens with a fourth wall break, and then, you know, we get the movie, we get these characters watching supposedly the movie that you're about to watch, while also having this full French picnic in a movie theater. And then we have, like, the crinkle wrap scene, and then the movie starts, and we get Western music while truckers. I think the movie really just plays fair with you and lets you know that you're going to be in for something where, you know, the normal logic of linear storytelling is not really going to be a thing. And so I think it does a good job preparing you. And yeah, the first transition into the first set of vignettes is pretty shocking. And it definitely feels a little off-putting on a first viewing. But if that had been the only time, that'd be one thing. But the movie does it pretty consistently up to the point where by the time the last couple sets of vignettes are running, you have a relationship with the flow of the movie at that point. So at least to me, it didn't really feel off-putting because I had settled into it.
I don't, but the meta framing device though also, like, kind of doesn't make sense, because they're also like, are they watching Tampopo? Because they're also, like, in the world of it. Like, I know what it's like to, like, suspend my disbelief, but, like, I just don't, it's like there are no rules with the world here that
I feel like expecting. I'm being asked to do too much. I'm being asked to suspend my disbelief and be prepared for, like, constant tone shifts and breaks in the action of the characters that I think I'm supposed to be paying attention to.
I mean, this is for sure not a left brain movie. You're just kind of missing that face value and enjoy it.
Yeah, because I mean, I think the most shot, just with the meta, the first thing I thought of when we were talking about that was, like, the last scene we have with those two, the guy in the white suit and the, I don't know what to call her, the girl who really likes food. is him, like, getting shot dead in the street. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
him to get shot? Am I sad? Like, very, very confusing.
I mean, he alludes to that scene in the very first scene of the movie. He mentions it's, like, the one scene he's looking forward to is, you know, when I get shot, and then she asked for my last words, and of course it's just like a recipe for sausage. Like, it's funny.
What a payoff.
Again, like, this isn't a linear screenwriting guru, you know, this setup pays off in this, and this pays off in this. It's an idiosyncratic movie, and again, I think for my first time, I was definitely put off by it. It took me two viewings to really learn to appreciate for what it was, but once I'd formed that relationship with it, I really can't ever see myself going back. Like, I love this movie.
Yeah, and I just keep trying to picture you, like, pitching this movie to someone. And it's so, like, you're so earnest, and I want to go down this road with you, but I just can't. Like, it just, there's just one too many things that you're saying. Like, I don't think I should have to watch a movie more than once to like it.
You know, sometimes when you eat a food, you know, you don't quite know how to eat it the first time. You don't really know how to process the flavor combination on your teeth. But, you know, once you take that second bite, or once you just have that second course, like, it you understand how to process the flavor. And I think that movie is the same. This movie is the same way.
So I need to wait 7 years for my taste buds to change.
I guess. Have you ever eaten bitter melon before?
No.
Okay. It's this food that, like, it tastes like shit, but I can't stop eating it. I don't understand what it is.
You're making a real, real good case for your movie taste, Ian.
Well, this movie doesn't taste like shit. It's a very unique combination of flavors, which maybe, like, okay, at first bite, you won't quite... You won't quite have experienced that combination of flavors in your mouth before, so...
If I'm following you on this metaphor, it's like if you mixed your breakfast, lunch, and dinner into a smoothie and tried to drink it.
Ooh.
Like, it's more palatable than like
all, that. All the elements are maybe there, but I don't know if they go together.
I mean, really, it's like ramen. Like, you can put pretty much anything in a bowl of ramen. Like, it's noodles, it's egg, it's... fish cake, it's meat, vegetables, pretty much any kind.
I have a topic change if we're ready.
I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the ethics of murdering animals in movies. Because that happens in this. It's a heroic soft shell turtle that gets killed in like a second.
It's tough for me because I'm not a vegan. I eat animal products. I know that there's a lot of questionable things that go on between an animal being alive and me eating it that I don't have to be involved in. And so in some ways I'm like, well, at least they like have to realize what is going into the meal that they're about to eat. Like they have to like look it in the eyes, you know? And I think that people should kind of have an understanding of that when they eat any animal products. But it's tough because like turtles were always my favorite animal and I don't think I would eat a turtle like ever. Yeah. And so that was, and it was really jarring to me, and I'm not going to lie, it took me like a solid 10 minutes to recover from it, and it maybe that's part of the reason that this movie lost me.
Yeah, I've only seen that I can think of two other movies where animals are killed in the movie. One of them is Thunderball, and made me not really like that movie. And the other is Cannibal Holocaust, which I will never watch again. That's the main reason, is that multiple animals are killed in that movie. And so, like, that it's something that, I don't know, I like animals more than people. So, like, you know, it's something that... is pretty off-putting to me as well. So yeah, Ian, I'm curious. Do you hate animals? I'm
just kidding. No, I mean, so the comparison you make between this and Cannibal Holocaust is really kind of perfect because that movie also has a turtle death scene.
And yeah. I think
the contrast between how those two turtle deaths are handled really kind of shows the difference in philosophy. So in Cannibal Holocaust, the turtle killing scene is, you know, we linger on it. It's cruel. They pull it apart. You really get this graphic depiction of the process of this thing being killed and eaten. Whereas in Tampopo, it happens in a second. Like, it's over. The turtle doesn't suffer. There's no cruelty involved. If anything, it's really, you know, like, it's the ethics of eating turtles and, you know, really eating meat is kind of up to you to personally decide. But I think it's a testament to the kind of movie's commitment to depicting artistry, culinary artistry in all its forms. Like, we get to see, you know, they're killing this turtle in a single stroke. They're not letting it suffer. You know, yeah, I can understand why that would be shocking for a Western viewer, which, you know, the United States has a far stricter code on depicting what animal death you are and aren't allowed to show. But at the same time, I think that there's taste to how it's done, even if it's a little, it can be uncomfortable.
If I can interject, how much does culture have to do with this? Because I don't know, to me, that plate is more of a, about their cuisine and about, than a choice for the filmmaker. Now, obviously as a filmmaker, you can choose to portray that or not. You can choose to have a fake live turtle. But Old Boy does something similar, actually, There is a live octopus eaten.
Oh, right.
In the course of that film.
Yeah.
Which weirdly, I'm, as a vegetarian and a lover of octopuses, I'm weirdly okay with because of the effect that it has in that film. It was just so striking. Like, I don't love it, but I'm not going to not watch it again. Do you know what I'm saying? So my question is, how much do we have to take into account the cultural differences and the norms of cuisine? And how much is that scene demonstrating something that is perhaps normal in that culture? Now, you can obviously have an opinion about whether that's a great thing or not. But it seems like to me, it seems like a slightly different concern than, you know, how you're treating your horses in a cavalry scene. Because there's just cultural factors involved. I don't know if any of you want to speak to that or not, but, or just putting it out there.
No, I think it's a fair question. I do think that that's part of why the scene is there. I don't think that the filmmaker was like, this is going to make people sad. Like, I don't think that was the intention at all. But just like with any, you know, foreign movie that you watch, or any movie, let's be honest, that came out before like the year 2000, there might be moments where you're like, that doesn't sit right with me. And that's, you know, that's just how I feel. Like, I can't necessarily always contextualize it. When I watch movies that I used to love that use like language that doesn't sit well with me anymore, sometimes that's enough for me to be like, I'm probably not going to revisit that one. And in this case, it's enough of a reason for me not to revisit this movie.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't know, it's pretty challenging for, I mean, not to really give away my position here, but I mean, I have seen this more than once, and that is always like, I always forget about it every time I watch this, and then I'm like, oh, goddamn. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think it is a reality of food that, you know, if there's meat on the table, something died to put it there, at least for now, until lab grown meat is more of a thing, which can't wait. But yeah, I don't know. Ian, do you have anything else?
That, you know, your position on watching animals die in movies is kind of a personal thing. Obviously, I completely understand if you're not cool with it. Again, I think that putting this movie in the same classification as Cannibal Holocaust, I don't think they deserve to be compared in that way. Again, one is intentionally cruel, and this is, I guess, it's literally as humane as you can possibly get. It dies in an instant, it doesn't suffer.
Okay. Well, I think we're about at time for best thing, worst thing. So, yeah, we can go around and see what people think. Let's see. How does this work? I think we can start with, we'll start with Casey.
Best thing for me is the beautiful shots of ramen and the fact that I love ramen, and then it makes me want to eat ramen every time. Worst thing for me, it's a tie between the turtle moment and the sexy food. That's just like not that's just not for me. I love food for what it's worth. Like, this movie should be up my alley, but like, to me, those two things don't need to cross over.
Yeah, let me think. Best thing for me is probably the the Tampopo storyline, which, you know, I wish it was more of the runtime, but it's the heart, it's what the movie is technically about, and, you know, it's nice to see all these people come together to improve a woman's business and quality of life. So I mean, you know, it's a very nice little story at the center. But that was my best thing. Worst thing. Worst thing is, yeah, it's either the turtle or it's the slow zoom in of a baby nursing through the whole credits, which feels weird for me to sit and watch. I don't know. It's like, it's just very intimate. And so, yeah, I don't know. That makes me feel weird. The turtle thing makes me feel sad. So I don't know which to choose between. Yeah, so Ian, best thing, worst thing.
I think the best thing for me is just the depiction of, you know, people passionate about a craft really working on passing that passion on to other people. And I think that, you know, that theme of the movie just sits well for me. And I think it can sit well for anybody, regardless if you're passionate about food or writing or filmmaking. And it really just is about like how the, you know, spirit of art is essential to life, and food just kind of happens to be the device that that theme is told through. And of course, like the food aspect of it, not to say that it's incidental, it's very much a focus of the movie. It's really fun in the way that it depicts that. But what I really love is just, yeah, the spirit of passion that's evident in all the characters in the movie. I think the worst thing for me is, I think like, yeah. So like, I love this movie. But usually like by the time that it ends, I'm like kind of ready for it to be over. Not because I'm bored, but because I feel like the movie is just long enough. Like if it had gone any longer, if it had hit the point anymore, it would have worn out its welcome. And I think it stops just at that point. And yeah, there's not really like a strong sense of, you know, rising action, climax, resolution. It just sort of is like doing its thing and then it stops. So I can see like how the structure of the movie might, you know, kind of wear on some people, but I personally like it.
Nice. Well, that means it's time to unmask. So let's start with Ian. We'll start with you. How do you really feel about Tampopo?
Yeah, everything that I was saying was super in earnest. I love this movie. Yeah, I think that, you know, my biggest beef with it was, you know, what I just mentioned there. I think it kind of just does its thing until it suddenly stops. But otherwise, I just find it a really fun and joyous movie to watch. I honestly think that this is one of the more heartwarming movies in my collection. Again, I can understand how it could be shocking and kind of off-putting, especially on a first watch. But I really think that if you had kind of an iffy time with it the first time, I really recommend just sit with it and give it another go like I did. And that second viewing really paid off, and now it's, you know, a really treasured movie in my collection. So yeah, love it.
Cool. Casey.
I was definitely harder on this movie as a roaster than I truly feel, but I will say it's interesting to me, Ian, because I have kind of the opposite effect. And I think part of it is the reason the first time I watched it was at Robert's birthday a couple years back. And it was with nuts. A group of people, and there was ramen being served. And so, like, the energy in the room, everyone was happy. We were eating ramen. We were watching a movie about ramen. We were laughing at kind of some of the absurd parts. We were sad about the turtle together. Like, it, you know, it was the vibe was there for me. And then rewatching it for this podcast, I found myself just, like, really easily distracted and just not as into it. And so it just like, it didn't grab me in the same way without that kind of group energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to recreate that just by yourself.
Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah. This is my first viewing, as I said. I enjoyed it kind of as a document. But I don't really like food, and I know that's weird. So it's hard for me to, it's hard for me to relate on that level of like when I'm supposed to really be into like these people get to eat this meal and I'm just like, I don't know. I appreciated a lot of the little digs. Like I think my favorite scene was the spaghetti scene. Just cause of like
the slurping.
Yeah. The slurping. Just yeah, because yeah. When I just remember finding out that, you know, the East has a much different relationship to food noises, than we do here. And just that delighting me so much. And so I loved seeing that like play out. But I thought it was really interesting. It is one that I'm definitely recommending to certain people. So I don't know yet how I feel about it, but I think I'm glad it exists.
And yeah, Casey kind of gave it away, but I love this movie. Roasting it was really difficult
good
for
job.
Me. It was hard for me to pick things to roast. I just kind of looked at, I don't know, it's one of those things of like you pick things that you actually like about it or reasons that factor into why you think it's great. And that was, I just did the opposite. And so, yeah, no, I think like this, I think this is like the third or fourth time I've seen it, maybe. Maybe fifth? I don't know. I've seen it once in college. I went to SIF and saw it, and they had a ramen food truck that we could bring food in and eat while we watched it. That birthday where I made like slow cooker ramen for people, that was not, it was fine. It was okay. I didn't make the best ramen you ever had. And then this time, and I maybe have, I think I've watched it one other time. I just can't remember. But yeah, so I mean, I really like, and this time the thing, I wrote a note down this time that was like, I think the point of all the vignettes is to illustrate like the wide range of human relationship to food, and that like mainly I think it was it's during the part when they're kind of going around and spying on other people's broth recipes, I think, where they make a thing about like, you shouldn't be making ramen for people that, like, normal people are eating your ramen, not people with really refined palates. So, like, why are you doing that? They're not going to appreciate it. Or like, yeah, like, whatever. You're doing it for the wrong reason, or you're making it for the wrong people. And I wrote this note that says, food is for the people, which is, like, I don't know, something, like, it's one of our most basic human needs, and some people crawl so far up their own asshole trying to, like, exclude people from the enjoyment of food sometimes, that it's so stupidly, it's stupid the way people do that, and, like, I don't know, that's so the opposite of what I think, and I love that this movie kind of is part of that thesis of, like, everyone deserves to enjoy food in whatever way they want. You want a shrimp on a bowl on your belly? That's okay. You want to eat a fresh oyster on the beach and cut your mouth open? That's okay too. Like it's, that's just kind of what I really like about this movie. And I love that it's cartoonish. Like, I don't know. It's got this Looney Tunes-y energy to it in some parts that is just so funny to me. I love the lady thumbing all the food in the grocery store, and the guy chasing her around the store and stuff, and he finally it doesn't go anywhere. He finally slaps her and he's like, ha ha, and then it just, that scene is just over. So yeah, this is great. I have like, we'll talk more about it in the extended play, but I love it. I'm glad I picked on purpose to put myself through the paces for my birthday. So yeah, everybody, that'll do it for Tampopo. And so, yeah, we're going to, as I mentioned, we're going to keep talking on our post show called Extended Play. That's just for our Patreon folks. So if you're interested in that, head over to patreon.com/24flamespod and check it out. A whole bunch of other stuff over there, too. Let's see. What else? If you've got thoughts on Tampopo, you want to email it to us? We're 24flamespod@gmail.com. You can find our show, more information on our show at partyfish.media/24flamespod, and all the other shows on our network on the website over there. And go ahead and find us on social media at 24flamespod. And this episode of 24 Flames Per Second was produced and hosted by me, Robert Bohorkis, co-hosted by Chris Pepper Hambrick, and the panels this week, the roasters were Casey Rahm and me, and on the defense was Ian Coleman. Our show music is composed and performed by Rob Joins and Will Paulson, and our co-op and network, Party Fish Media, is produced by Quasi Phillips, Will Paulson, and myself. So yeah, everybody, I mentioned this during the ad break, if you skipped it, I'll be back in next month with we're doing Rent in March, Quasi, halfway between now and then, is got another Flame Off episode, so be sure to stick around for that, keep an eye on our socials for the topic of it whenever it's told to me by Quasi. And so yeah, everybody, thanks so much for listening. and we'll catch you in a few weeks. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Media.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.